Hi there. Welcome to Mushroom Hour. Today on the Mushroom Hour podcast, we're honored to be joined by Piotr Ziomba, professor's assistant at the University of Agriculture in Krakow, Poland. Piotr works with gourmet and medicinal mushrooms, and his journey started on the Faculty of Biotechnology and Horticulture. During his bioengineering studies, he found out that nobody was doing research on mushrooms. So Piotr took matters into his own hands and organized a student science program to start cultivating mushrooms. Now, at this point in his career, Piotr has completed a master's thesis about oyster mushrooms, co-authored 11 scientific papers, and is currently finishing PhD studies. His work focuses on different properties of mycelium from in vitro culture and fruiting bodies, but also focuses on supplementation of mushroom substrate with novel biomaterials. He works on a multidisciplinary science team, pursuing all kinds of exciting work on mushrooms, from attempting to cultivate wild mushrooms, using non-typical agriculture and food waste in mushroom cultivation, and using waste mushroom substrate as fertilizer. His passion for mycology is palpable, and along with his great team of professors, doctors, and students, they are working to learn everything they can for the glory of mushrooms. Piotr, thank you so much for joining us on the Mushroom Hour podcast.
Thank you for invitation. Nice to meet you and nice to speak with you and tell my story.
Really nice to meet with you, and you have really an inspiring story, and you're doing some really amazing work, you know, the frontiers of mushroom cultivation in a lot of ways. So I'm excited to learn more about the work you and your team are doing. Before we get into everything that you're working on, Piotr, why don't you tell us how you fell in love with mushrooms and how you got interested in studying these amazing organisms?
Well, it's hard to say on what point are we speaking, because when I was small child, I was also I was always kind of nature child. I was every holiday I was staying at the village, I was collecting bugs, I was playing with frogs, and I was just interested in all living creatures that are around me. Well, when I was small, forest mushroom picking in Poland is very popular, so I was very often going with my aunt or my grandmother to the forest to pick some wild forest mushroom. But one thing that I remember very good is when I starting to be in primary school, like I was 7, and we have some project about something nature, and I picked up the Amanita mushroom, Amanita muscari, and it was the small one, and I put it in the jar for the night with a bit of the ground, and I was really surprised that it started to grow, and it was just it was small mushroom, and then I bring the second day it was open mushroom of Amanita. This is something that was always interesting me. And well, I go to the next stage of my education, then you say the part of my story that I started to study at the University of Agriculture in Krakow, and all started there. Directly to the science.
Yes, and you have an amazing story in terms of cultivation there at the University of Agriculture. You know, I know a lot of people get interested in mushrooms in one way or another, but particularly people who get interested in cultivation seem to get this obsession and need to set up a lab or set up some kind of grow space. So tell us a little bit about that process for you of getting interested in actually growing mushrooms, and then what that process was like there to build your own space to do that at university.
Yes, I have to say that I have a bit of lucky, because if we look at the mushroom cultivation, we can see some hobbyists that they're doing everything but the small scale, or we see some business people that they want to start business and earn the money. I got this opportunity at my university that, well, I was my degree, I was studying the bioengineering study. This is kind of connection of horticulture and genetic modification, and it was strictly about the plants. Well, I have just some lectures about mushrooms that are pests in the plants protection, and it was all. But I just asked my question that I want to do something interesting, something something new. And I meet one doctor, Dr. Jacek Nawrocki. He is actually the specialist in fungal and bacterial pests in plants, but he was also hobbyist in growing mushroom. He does inoculate some logs, buy some oyster mushroom substrate that was giving him mushrooms. So he helped me a lot in the hard beginning. So he learned how to work in sterile way, how to do agar, how to do grain. Everything started with him. And also he was the friend of the dean of the my faculty, who also work with the pathogenical fungus, Professor Mazur, Stanisław Mazur, and I just asked them if this possibility to start to work with government medicinal mushroom, the big mushroom we loved all. And they just think up, well, this is something nobody actually is doing. There is actually some old storage basement under the laboratory greenhouses. And they say, well, nobody is using the space. You can come there if you write some small project, what you exactly want to do, and we'll try to find some money for you. And everything started when I was student. They gave me my 60 meters. Firstly, was using hot water to sterilize wheat straw and cultivate oyster mushroom. And now I have 250 meters. I just like mycelium. I going everywhere and taking all possible space. I have still many other ideas. I want to have all building for my mushroom lab in the future. And now I have, well, it's not full professional laboratory because it's quite of self-made, but I have big sterilizator, which is laboratory one. I have just some interesting cultivation chamber. You can, if anybody interesting, can find it on my Instagram, Poland Fungi. And what is most interesting, I am in the team of scientists. So I'm cultivating mushroom and we are doing interesting research. Now I'm finishing my PhD studies and I have two supervisors. One of my supervisors is from Agricultural University, Professor Agnieszka Senkara. She's chief of the very good horticulture science magazine Folia Horticulture. And she is kind of multidisciplinary scientist. She was also interested in mushroom, but she rather specialist in the plants. But now, of course, we're working together. And my second supervisor, Professor Bożena Muszyńska, I met her when I start my PhD study, and she has biggest influence of me because she is the biggest mushroom passionate I ever meet in Poland. She does living only about the mushroom. She's pharmacology professor at the Jagiellonian University, so one of the best in Poland, and she has hundreds of scientific papers. She's working especially of the mycelium, and she's growing mycelium as a, she wants to make some medicine from the mycelium. Of course, we already have some, but she, well, she got lots of research, and she really influenced me a lot, and I learned a lot about mushroom from her. So this is how it's work. Of course, there are many other people that helped me on my path, and everything is growing well, like mushrooms.
I had this image of an academic building slowly getting overtaken by mycelium, and Piotr in the center with his team working in the lab. But, you know, there's so much in that story, including one of the most powerful things I think people discover when they start researching fungi or mushrooms is the connections, the deep, strong connections you make with people, and a lot of times with people who you think to yourself, how did I end up speaking with such a talented person or working with such a talented person? You know, and that happens to me all the time on the show with every guest I talk to. But just talking with people who get into it in academic mycology, even as an amateur, but they become part of this greater community, you end up getting to share space and time and knowledge with such incredibly talented people, which it sounds like you very much have. And you talked about one of the other points I wanted to bring up, which is, you know, what were some of the questions when you started researching mushroom cultivation? Because now you're kind of looking at all elements from substrate to fruiting body. But what were some of the initial questions that you wanted to answer that kicked off your research? Because growing mushrooms is fantastic just for the sake of having beautiful gourmet and medicinal mushrooms. But what were some of the questions or things you were trying to research when you started cultivating?
Well, I started like a bit of like hobbyist, as I say. First thing I do, I just take some wheat straw, put in the bath, and use hot water to sterilize it, and put it in some plastic. And I was really happy that oyster mushrooms are growing. But then I just want more, more, more. So I just need to do many research. Especially, I love to the content of USA growers because there's many USA growers that are have great content on YouTube or on Facebook or on especially Instagram. And I learned that there are, for example, unicorn bugs that are perfect for growing mushroom, and they are something I really need. I learned, for example, about the master mix, so the mix of the pellets and soya beans, and I just also put it in my research. So this is one of the thing that I really love in the mushroom cultivation, that you find so much interesting, inspiring people in the internet that are just showing their research, their tricks, and you learn from them. So all my laboratory is it's not actually my, some things are my ideas, but these ideas grow on someone else's ideas, and I hope on my ideas some better ideas will grow. This is also, and I'm now, this is still the student club, so I have working with younger students, and they sometimes they have new ideas, and they just helping all this mushroom lab to grow in the glory of the mushrooms.
For the glory of the mushrooms.
Yes.
I love when you sent that phrase over. I'm going to start using that all the time. For the glory of mushrooms. Well, and that's really interesting because a lot of the people in the US who might consider themselves hobby cultivators or at-home cultivators, that's a very strong, vibrant community here in the States. And you're putting forward this potent example of how that community is influencing academia because, you know, we all know that mycology blurs those lines between who is the amateur, who is the quote unquote professional. And so your story, you're directly kind of uniting both communities. So that's really powerful.
Yes, this is also it's I think the USA growing mushroom growing people are very inspiring, and it's a bit different in Poland, because in Poland well, firstly, when I was asked that I want to cultivate mushroom, they suggest me that I should go to the other university in Poland, in Poznań. And there is one Professor Marek Siwulski, who is also the expert in the cultivation of mushroom. I m met him later, but then, of course, I get my own space. But what I'm going to say, this is like Poland is one of the biggest cultivator of the white button mushroom, where white button mushroom are just in every shop, and it's just our export hit to the other country of European Union. We grow a little bit of oyster mushroom, that oyster mushroom is also very popular, but other mushroom, which their name exotic mushroom, I hate this name, exotic mushroom. They are not exotic mushroom, they are more interesting mushroom, I would say, like lion's mane, shiitake, all this Asian mushroom. There is completely nobody actually know about them, and no, we have big factories that are growing white button mushroom, oyster mushroom, but there are no research, and there are no companies that are growing other mushroom. And for example, sometimes I can, this is something that really put me in the mat when I go to the shop, and I, for example, see king oyster mushroom that are grown in the Korea. This is one of the madness that I hate, that the planes are taking the mushroom from the other part of the world and selling in Poland when the Polish farmer can do this. The same, for example, with bunashinai mushroom that are from China and sell in Poland. And as I say, well, I started to promote the mushroom, but I'm not the first one. As I say, for example, in Poznań, this professor, he made some great books about growing reishi, growing shiitake, but there was not much influence. Well, there's a little influence near him because there are a few companies that are producing the mushroom substrate, but still, well, it's lots of to work in Europe, in Poland to promote the mushroom. And this is kind of my main mission, that I want to see the in the shopping shelves full of different kind of mushroom, like for example in China or Korea. And this is my main goal, to just people should eat the mushroom because they are great food. This is kind of part of my research, that we are checking that mushroom has lots of indole compounds, for example hydroxytryptophan, which helps our brain work better. We have all these beta-glucans in the mushroom that are good for our immunology system. We have phenolic compounds, we have vitamin B, which are good for vegetarian. And I'm not completely vegetarian because sometimes I eat chicken, but I think when the people, for example, will eat three times in the week oyster mushroom or shiitake mushroom rather than chicken and the pork, it will be the better thing for our planet than not driving a car or buying electric car, because, well, growing mushroom is ecological, is not minimal impact on the planet, and we are using some waste substrate. So I hope it's the future, and it's future food, and this is my main goal, to promote eating mushroom as a part. It's a very important part of the diet of people.
I think you just laid out the vision that so many people see about mushrooms being the future of food, the massive amount of potential. I mean, you just explained that beautifully. And it's interesting because I think among mushroom lovers in the United States and maybe Western European, maybe just specifically kind of Anglican cultures, there's this mythos around Eastern European countries like Poland that they have a much more mycophilic culture, whereas cultures influenced by England are more mycophobic. And that's kind of the generalization that's made. But when you describe the landscape of commercial mushroom cultivation and what mushrooms you find in stores, I'm very surprised to hear that it sounds, in a lot of ways, similar to what we face in the United States, in that there are lots of massive white button mushroom farms. And you'll find those in every grocery store. But that's, for a lot of people, where their experience with culinary mushrooms stops. It's especially frustrating when you hear people say, oh, I don't really like mushrooms, and all they've tried is that species of agaricus. It's like, no, you haven't tried mushrooms yet. But it's interesting to hear that that's a very similar landscape in Poland. Now, of course, here, this in the past 10 years has undergone a lot of change as more and more people are becoming interested. Yes, they want to grow, you know, these quote unquote exotics, or, you know, more gourmet mushrooms, just a bigger variety of medicinal and gourmet mushrooms. So that's starting to change. But that's very curious that in a culture where people are mushroom hunting from a young age, in a much bigger way than happens here, they still haven't gotten that same variety when it comes to cultivation.
Yes, I think it's, as you say, the Polish and the Slavic nation are very mycophilic, but it's also a very good thing, because when the summer on the autumn started, there is lots of people in the forest, and they're all picking all the mushrooms, and they are then eating them. And some people are really, when I'm going for some meetings of the mushroom lovers, see, like, they're identifying very some Polish on Facebook, some Polish groups, on that they just found, oh, this is the second time that we find this mushroom that is like 1 centimeter, but I'm so happy because I use microscope and I find this spores, and I'm sure that this is the second place in Poland that it actually grow, and I find it. So this is great stuff. But as I say, on the other hand, the people love the forest mushroom, and you can even buy in shop the mushroom that are picked from the forest, but there is very little interested in shiitake mushroom or lion's mane. Lion's mane is something I have even give something some lion mane to some doctor from a university who was interested, and she was looking at it. Okay, I will try it. And then 2 days ago, she says, sorry, but I bring it to my family and they say that it might be poisonous. And I say, what?
Oh, no.
It's not poisonous. It's perfect mushroom, it smells nice, and you have thousands of research internet, and she says sorry, and they say that I cannot eat it because when they pick up mushroom from the forest, it's okay, but when it's controlled grow mushroom and it doesn't look like mushroom, but it smells like mushroom, tastes like
That's
mushroom.
Wild.
Yes, this was quite of worried for me, but I think this is the problem that. There is lots of marketing is needed, and people need to be taught about it. That where there are not only white button mushroom and shiitake, but there are like hundreds of mushroom that are very tasty, and they can be bought in the grow in control environment. They can be all around. You don't have to wait on the summer to pick up mushroom, but you can go to the shop and you can eat mushroom like every day, and it will be better for your health than eating the pork every day. And as I said before, better for our planet. So this is some strange stuff that on other hand, people in Poland love mushroom, but when I was showing the mushroom that was grown, oh, this is strange mushroom, I want it because it might be poisonous. So a bit madness.
You're highlighting a really interesting social dynamic of people not trusting a cultivated mushroom in a controlled environment. They trust the forest more. I have to say, part of me kind of loves that is a thing. But yes, clearly there is a lot of work you can do to bridge that divide and show people that mushrooms that you cultivate or mushrooms that you farm are still going to be incredible. Well, and talking about mushroom cultivation, you know, I think a great place to kick that off in your work in mushroom cultivation is talking about kind of where it all starts, the substrate. The food. So tell us a little bit about the work you've done exploring mushroom substrates. And we could start that with, you know, are there key components that all substrates must have? Are substrates very different depending on the species you're trying to grow? Give us some of those basics and then tell us some of the ways you've explored new substrates or novel substrates.
Yes, well I'm growing only wood mushroom. I don't like white button mushroom, of course. So to grow white button mushroom, you need, let's say, shit. So I don't like to work with shit, and I want to work with something that smells nice. So all the mushroom that I'm interested in is wood mushroom. But of course, I think lots of possibility to use some extra additional stuff to the substrate. So the base need to be a sawdust or the pellet. I like working with the pellet because it's easier to maintain a proper humidity of it. But also I have some sawdust as the base for the mushroom. But as I said, some of my research are with some additional stuff inside. For example, I have very nice experiment with using the apple juice waste after this work, perfect for oyster mushroom and king oyster mushroom, which was surprising for me. And I used like 25% and 50% of the maize was the apple juice waste, and the oyster mushroom grow well on it. And when we do some research in the laboratory, we find out that it's influenced also the biological value of this mushroom, that they have more vitamin B, and there are more phenolic compounds after they grow on some strange substrate. Also, we use some from vegetable juices waste from the carrot, from the celery, and also the oyster mushroom eat it and it's work well. So this is one stuff that I was checking, and also one research that I'm now, it's about using the hemp waste on the mushroom cultivation, and also the hemp work well. And I was really surprised that lion's mane and shiitake grow on strict hemp substrate. without sawdust. So this was very interesting for me. I got some company that have some special mill because it's very hard to grind the hemp waste after CBD production. Yeah. But it's also very, very interesting stuff. And other stuff that it's part of my research, part of my FIDI, was some additional bioelements like selenium, like zinc, that we add to the substrate. And it's first of all the mushroom accumulated. So this is very interesting that, for example, selenium is some deficit bioelement in human diet, and you can grow mushroom with selenium and zinc. And when you eat this mushroom, it's work like diet supplement. So this is interesting. And also Amazing. The interesting stuff is still that you're giving to the substrate a little bit of this selenium, and it's also influence all other bio compounds of this mushroom. So it change phenolic compounds, change indole compounds, change vitamin B content. So this is a big research area that we actually don't know the biology of the mushroom. We don't know the mushroom enzymes. There are very, very little work about this. So this is very interesting part of my research.
That kind of research could change everything. I mean, understanding how supplementation of substrate translates to actual nutritional compounds or biological makeup of the mushroom. I mean, suddenly the possibilities are infinite. We know that mushrooms are, yeah, these enzymatic, basically chemical factories. So who knows what we can engineer mushrooms to produce inside of them by introducing new compounds into the substrate. That is fascinating.
Mushrooms are already superfood, and with researching the mushroom substrate, we can make this food even better. Well, it's perfect, but it can be even more perfect. So this is the great thing, and on this way, I hope that my research will influence some maybe commercial growers. Like, for example, in USA, they find out when they while growing this white button mushroom and put the UV on the mushroom grow, they lots of vitamin D come in this mushroom. So this is second stuff that the mushrooms are super food, and they can be even super food.
So even the wood decomposers you work with are showing these properties, but then even kind of the secondary decomposers like white button mushrooms, agaricus, those substrates can be modulated to produce. I mean, that is mind-blowing. And I think we're going to see, honestly, what you've just said, I think is kind of one of the futures maybe of mushroom cultivation. And think about the agricultural partnerships. If you already have a vegetable farm or a fruit orchard, it might make sense to grow mushrooms and use that waste as the substrate for these super packed nutritional mushrooms. That's incredible. Now, were there substrates that you tried that maybe didn't work so well? Maybe even you thought they would, but some materials you tried using that just didn't work very well?
Well, I would rather say that sometimes I just got contamination like everybody. So
right.
I find out that some substrates, especially with too much sugar, it can be contaminate. For example, trichoderma or rather penicillium, it's hard to say. Need microscope to say what's inside really. But my beginning was hard because I don't have my sterilizer and I have to pasteurize substrate, and of course the pasteurization is not so good like sterilization. But now I'm also using, I'm a professor assistant, and I'm doing the lectures for the students about growing mushroom. And on these lectures I just give students like, this is the stuff you can grow your own mushroom. Here is, for example, some papers. Here is some waste from the apples. Here is some waste for beetroot. Here is one sawdust. Here is hemp. And your job is to create your own substrate. And this is really fun because everybody are mixing the substrate by their own way. And all the time, when mostly using oyster mushroom because they are easy to grow, they bring the mushroom bags to home, and then they are showing me the photos. Wow, great, the mushroom grow on this substrate. I wasn't believe that this is possible, thanks for this lecture. So this is a second thing that is really satisfaction in my job, that I'm teaching how to grow mushroom, and this is putting the smile of the students I'm teaching it.
Absolutely. You are helping change that relationship maybe with the Polish culture and cultivated mushrooms. And do some of the professors you work with, I mean, you're talking about people that are incredibly passionate about mushrooms, may have worked with them for decades, including the pharmacology. Are they getting as excited as you're getting, as I'm getting, about these findings when it comes to substrate and cultivation? I mean, are these things that are really, I guess, are these things that are getting doctors and professors you work alongside with very excited as well?
Yes, well, we are all team, and we are just all the time happy when, of course, first of all, we got this mushroom. There are always, when, for example, one professor was taking them some big research about mushroom, and research was about pickling the mushroom with bacteria. Yes. Pickling. And she said, she was from the other faculty, she said that she take like 20 kilos of the pink oyster mushroom and some black king oyster mushroom to the faculty, and everybody was looking at her. Wow, what is it? Where did you bring this strange mushroom? Are they edible? So, or mushroom are something that are catching the eye, and people are always, they are so strange, but so interesting. So, as I say, the look is very interesting, but also when we this research when we have research and we find out something interesting, we're of course happy, and when we publish this article, this is also very satisfaction of it.
Absolutely. And do you guys do any research as well into, I know you have an expert there researching the mycelium, so do you look at both the fruit body and the mycelium with this research? And if you do, what have been some of the findings there?
Yes, this is kind of my mostly my PhD research. As I say, my supervisor, Professor Muszyńska, she's working on the mushroom mycelium from like 30 years. So it was all of her research, and she started also from the beginning, that everybody was saying and her department that, well, don't work the mushroom, work on plants. The mushroom are not interesting. They're poisonous and just don't mind. But she also say, well, I have to work on them. And now we have nice scientific papers when we compare the mushroom mycelium with mushroom fruiting bodies. And it's very different depend of species. For example, in Heritium, we find out that Heritium mycelium is much more powerful in indole compounds than the mushroom fruiting bodies. And everybody are just saying about this Heritinos that is working on our brain, but also in the mushroom, Heritium mushroom mycelium, you can find lots of this indoline compound, this 5-hydroxy tryptophan that is a precursor for all this serotonin, dopamine. So I think all this work together to improve our brain function. But on other hand, for example, in Cordyceps, we find out that Cordyceps mycelium has much less cordyceps in the compared to the fruiting bodies, but the mushroom mycelium producing it, it's really also fascinating, because here we have some liquid culture and you can modify it in so many way, and stressing it with different temperature, growing with lower, higher sugar content, giving also some additional bio elements, that all influence much more this mycelium. So here still hundreds of years of research to research everything.
You find that so much with a lot of the work into mycology, because it is so new. There are so many questions. I end up always saying, okay, this is generations of research. And it's also impressive to think that something, it's not basic, that's not the right word, but something as fundamental as understanding maybe the metabolism of these different species, these different organisms, and how they process the different food that they're given, and how that translates to their own biological physiology. I mean, that's a very fundamental core understanding of an organism. How does it process its food to make up its body, if you will? And so the fact that we don't have a comprehensive understanding and that you're asking some of these very fundamental questions, and we're talking about hundreds of years of research, it's really kind of awe-inspiring at how much there is left to discover and all those possible species and substrate combinations. And maybe this just speaks to the mushroom being an organism that's just an organism that has so much potential in terms of what it can do, that it can take in so much different food and have such a different effect. I mean, really, really, really inspiring. And then there in the lab, we've talked about lion's mane, we've talked about oyster. What are some of the other gourmet and medicinal mushrooms that you guys are cultivating?
Well, I was trying everything that is possible. So some reishi, some buna shimei, some chestnut mushroom, nameko, all this mushroom I managed to grow pepino. For example, it's also nice, interesting mushroom, but also part of my research, it is kind of hobbies because I didn't have any scientific papers. I love to isolate some wild mushroom that was never grown before. And for example, I grow for the first time possible, because I never have heard about it, the Marasmius aliuceus. It's garlic mushroom. It's fascinating because this mushroom has a smell and the taste of the garlic, but it has completely different substance compared to the garlic. So this is one thing that I hope in the future I do some research of it. It was really hard to grow. It was like 6 months of waiting the substrate to show some fruiting bodies, but few times I managed to grow it. And also, well, for example, we know the Trametes versicolor, it's quite easy to grow, but I isolate the mushroom of Trametes gibbosa, hirsuta, it's different species of it. And also they show the fruiting bodies, and I just got them. For example, the porcelain fungi, very nice looking fungi. Mucidula, mucida, Latin name of it. It was also very satisfaction to isolate the mushroom and then grow it in the artificial way. So this is part of thing I do in my free time. So when I'm going to the forest, sometimes, oh, I need to pick it up, go to laboratory, try to isolate this mushroom, and we'll see if I possible to grow it, but not much time in the last time. So this is something I would like to do more often, to isolate some wild mushroom. And also, this is something we don't know. This all wild mushroom, they have many biological compounds that are not known by the people, and possible they can be some future medicinal for many diseases. So this is very interesting to research.
Of course, that's one of those great promises, is that with organisms that are so abundant, such a high variety of species and such amazing chemical factories, you know, what compounds have we yet to discover? And just because I'm so curious about this, I think every mushroom cultivator, and even someone who isn't into cultivating mushrooms, you know, they always wonder, how can we cultivate? We know the mushrooms that we're growing right now commercially. How do we cultivate other mushrooms, mushrooms that have not been tamed yet, if you will, have not been domesticated? So when you're attempting to cultivate a wild mushroom, how do you go through the process? And maybe just, we can use that example of the Marasmius aliaceus. How do you approach figuring out what the substrate should be? What goes through your mind to try to grow it artificially?
Yes, well, of course, first of all, you have to find out if the mushroom you pick, if it's mycorrhizia mushroom or saprobiotic mushroom. If it's mycorrhizia, there is now maybe somebody will find out, but it's impossible to grow bolet mushroom or some, for example, amanita mushroom, but the mushroom mycelium actually can be grown. So this is interesting because this mushroom mycelium also got some properties. But of course, my goal is to grow fruiting bodies. And if we telling about the Marasmus aliuceus, this is the saprobiotic mushroom that is growing on the beech wood. So I just prepare the beech substrate very similar to the substrate that I use for oyster or lion's mane. And firstly, well, it's overgrown really fast. I prepare mycelium, grain spawn, and it's everything works well and grow fast. But then, of course, the fruiting bodies didn't want to disappear. And if for the long time I have no success, and so I put it outside to some outside my lab, just in the nature condition, and then this nature condition forced this mushroom to grow up. So this was also the interesting stuff. But I find out that in the one bucket I put, take this mushroom substrate, put some soil on it, and leave it outside to rain, to just be nature condition. And they find out in the box that some plant appear, it forced this mushroom to grow. And then I bring this plant to my mushroom, I prepare new boxes, new substrates, I put the soil on the mushroom, and I put this plant, and Eureka, the mushroom grow in my artificial chamber, and I didn't need my outside condition and just managed to grow it completely inside. So mushroom cultivation, the wild mushroom cultivation, is just observing the nature and trying to be like the nature. So this is also fascinating in growing mushrooms.
A very potent insight, and I love that about a plant. And it sounds like it wasn't mycorrhizal necessarily, but it needed that plant partner to grow.
This is very, very, it was very, very surprising that this plant was in some way necessary. Maybe the root, when they started to grow in the mushroom substrate, made some stressful condition, because this is my hypothesis, or it's just something we still don't know about them.
Very interesting. And I'm sure, as someone then who really is making those observations of nature and trying to cultivate mushrooms by bringing some of those natural elements into an into a controlled environment, how have you imagined we may grow mycorrhizal mushrooms? And I know I'm kind of asking the billion dollar question that so many cultivators and foragers have asked: how do we grow these amazing ectomycorrhizal mushrooms in a controlled environment? But, you know, take us through maybe some of your imagination. How have you thought that might be possible? Or what are some hypotheses you've made in your own mind?
Well, I think the key to do this are some enzymes of mushroom, because when we're talking about mycorrhizal mushroom, there is some tree, and there is some connection of tree and the mushroom, and this tree, this roots of the tree, are making some kind of enzymes, and of course it's giving food. So maybe the substrate, of course, the substrate might be just the soil with a little bit of some sugars, but putting some specific enzymes in the proper way might be this key to make some this mycelium to produce fruiting bodies. But, well, this is maybe some artificial roots, but it sounds a bit strange. We'll see.
Yeah, yeah, or maybe plant cells in vitro somehow near
but
the
I
mushroom.
But I think this mushroom enzymes, we know the enzymes in the, and hormones, not actually enzymes, the hormones. We know the all hormones in the plants, but we don't know the hormones of the mushrooms that are influencing their growth cycles. So this is a key.
So learning the hormones that actually triggering that fruiting process, yeah, and how we elicit, very, very interesting. And we've talked about then, you know, mycelium and fruiting bodies, and I appreciate you giving some of that analysis for how you guys have researched compounds in mycelium versus fruiting body. And you may or may not know this, but this is kind of a big debate in the commercial and the medicinal mushroom community. When you hear about different practitioners, businesses who use and promote medicinal mushrooms, there's a debate about what is superior. Is it the fruiting body? Is it the mycelium? What are your thoughts on that discussion from doing the research, looking at the compounds, looking at how maybe it's not even about the mycelium or fruit body, maybe it's about the substrate we should all be talking about. But what is your thoughts on that debate between mycelium and fruit body? What's more medicinal?
Well, I would say the mushroom supplementation and all this pills that everybody want to sell us, this is really something. I would say, for example, when I look in the Polish market, that we have lots of diet supplements made of mushroom, and you can buy thousands of them. Also, Polish people love diet supplements and buying them a lot. But when you look on the origin of this mushroom diet supplement, they're all made in China. And this is something, of course, China people are expert in growing mushroom, but what I say before, this they can be grown in the Polish substrate. And what is else, I also have fun of it, that very often you can see it's diet supplement and it's some extraction and it's 30% of beta glucans. But when I check in the science data, like all mushroom standard fruiting body is 30% of beta glucans, so you don't need some extraction because it's standard 30% of the beta glucans. What are you saying? What's better? Well, it's very different because, as I say, for example, in lion's mane, the mushroom mycelium has more substrate. I would say that, and also we're talking about this extraction, and when you extract something, you lose something. You have, what's the main compound of the mushroom? Are those beta glucans? Are those terpenoids? Are those some different substance? We don't actually know them. It's all something we don't know. So I would say if somebody wants to do the perfect mushroom diet supplement, it should be 25% of powder fruiting body, 25% of the dual extraction of this fruiting bodies, like 10 times, and then the same from the mushroom mycelium. So 25% of just powder mycelium, but not the mycelium grown on grain, but grown in the in vitro culture. So of course the cost of this supplement will be very high. And in the end, this extraction, but still what you were saying, but what kind of substrate should be weighed or used, or what kind of liquid culture should be made. And here, of course, you can use many of them. So this diet supplements are really a strange thing. And I would say just the best is just to eat mushroom often. And even there was some research in Japan that the people that are eating like 200 mushrooms, fresh mushroom every day, are much less possible to have dementia of Alzheimer. And it doesn't matter if it's lion's mane or oyster mushroom or shiitake. If you just eat mushroom and it's in your diet, you will be healthier, and it's less possible that you will have this horrible brain disease in your old age.
That is absolutely amazing. And what you're saying marries up perfectly with a guest we've had on the show, Christopher Hobbs, who's a medicinal mushroom herbalist here in the United States. And he had that exact advice. He said, eat more mushrooms more frequently. That's your best bet in terms of diet supplementation. There is no perfect supplement, but I like your answer about the supplement in that it's a synthesis of these things. Not choosing just one is better than the other, but actually if you synthesize all of them, that would be your kind of ideal supplement if you wanted to go that route. So some really powerful insights that I'm hearing echoes of with a lot of herbalists and a lot of people who have really looked at this issue kind of find exactly what you just said. Now, you've mentioned a big part of this is also education. How, and this can be hard to quantify, this can be hard to know the impact necessarily you're having, but how do you think you may have impacted the University of Agriculture with your mushroom experiments? And these can be examples of students now who are working in the lab that are doing their own research, or maybe impacts you've made on professors or people at the university who may have said, you know, that before they may have said, hey, look at plants, not mushrooms, because there's nothing going on with these mushrooms. Maybe some of that culture's changed, but how do you think this project you've been working on in really going into mushroom cultivation has had some of those ripple effects on the university?
Well, it's in university I can see quite a big influence, because firstly everybody was having a little bit fun that I'm growing some probably the magic mushroom in the basement, and nothing will be from this. They give him some money and he's just doing some strange research. But then like few years later, they find out that I have scientific papers, of course, with some other professors in the Food Chemistry Journal. It's one of the very good journal with high impact factor. And there are many professors that didn't even have their own publication, even worst impact factor journal. Well, impact factor is kind of something that if it's higher, it's better journal, we have bigger impact on the science. So yeah. So this was somebody was saying, wow, this is incredible that you have publication in this scientific journal, and it is very incredible that you start from nothing and now you have such a good scientific paper. So this is one influence. Of course, influence outside university, it's also big because I have some invasion to the Polish television and I was showing the mushroom that I grow and also telling my story. I have just some few minutes about it, but also I managed to show myself to the standard people. It was, I hope, beginning. Maybe someday I will manage to have more time to speak about this mushroom and tell people just look for them and buy them, eat them, because it's just good for your health.
Well, and along those lines, you know, and I think we can find a lot of advice in your story and kind of how you went on this journey. But what would be some words of wisdom for people that want to explore mushroom cultivation, whether that be in kind of a professional academic setting, or whether that be growing mushrooms for themselves and their family, whether that be starting a mushroom farm? I mean, do you have any advice for people when they start their journey of cultivation, or maybe to encourage people who are kind of taking those first steps?
Well, of course, first of all, don't give up. Even if you prepare 100 kilo of substrate and then after a few days it's turned completely green. And also don't give up when before you made 100 substrate it's work well, then you make 300 substrate and it go completely green. So just don't give up and just look for the people, look on the YouTube, you look on the Instagram, research, do your own research, read Paul Stamets' book, Growing Medicinal and Gourmet Mushroom. It's our Bible and it's just almost everything there. But of course, not everything. Mushrooms are teaching us all the time. So you have to observe them, you have to just look on them and learn from them, and they always will surprise you.
Man, that might be some of the best advice. Learn to look, observe, and really listen to the mushrooms when you start that cultivation journey. You know, and something that I had forgotten to bring up before, another topic I wanted to make sure we cover is, what have you explored in terms of using? So we've gotten our substrate mixed together. We've figured out exactly what we want to try to feed our mushroom. Our mushroom is fruited. It's beautiful. We've eaten it. We've gotten all the amazing benefits. Now, that substrate, after it's fruited, once we're done with it, what kind of uses have you been looking into, or maybe that you want to look into in the future, of how we can use that spent mushroom substrate?
Yes, this is kind of my future hope to do research of it, and I'm thinking about this all the time, because one more time, when we're looking at the nature, when the mushrooms are eating the dead wood, they're transferring it into the soil. When we're producing mushroom substrate and after the substrate made the mushroom, this is kind of a transferred thing that can be used in the soil. But of course, some bugs need to work, some bacteria, some other mushroom need to work. So my research that I would like to start in some near future when I finish my PhD is to just look at this process and try to find out some clues how it's work. So find out for how long this substrate should be composted to be the perfect soil. Well, it's already working because lots of permacultures and lots of growers even in USA. I observed some Instagram, they put this mushroom substrate in their garden, wait 1 year and then put it to the tomato or other vegetables, and they're growing perfectly without any artificial fertilizers. So this is the great big tough about growing mushroom, that you are not producing waste. You use waste, you transfer waste, not transfer waste to food, and the waste after growing the mushroom is not waste. It's something you can be transferred to the soil and fertilizer for the plants, and or the cycle can be just. Or the cycle can be just closed. It's something yeah. maybe Elon Musk has to think about it. Elon Musk, if you want to just bring people to the Mars, you have to think about growing mushroom, because without growing mushroom in Mars, you won't achieve anything. So the mushrooms are key to colonize Mars. Hope Elon Musk will hear it.
That is the clarion call to Elon Musk, is go start researching mushrooms and how we can use them to help us get to space. But that is one of those things that I know so many of us get fascinated by, all the technologies possible with mushrooms. You know, we can make houses, we can make lights, we can make, but I think one of the most exciting technologies still is just how they can integrate and totally change our food and agriculture system. I mean, you've already highlighted some elements of that process that I hadn't even thought of. And I think we can't overstate the difference that's going to make in how we feed the planet, both with the mushrooms themselves, how we give them more nutrition, but then after their life is done, how it'll kind of reduce our reliance maybe on artificial fertilizers, I hope. So yeah, I think we can't overstate that impact. Well, we talked about the future then, some of your future work and research, but are there any other for you, are there any other burning questions as we look into the future when it comes to the frontiers of mushroom cultivation? You know, are there any other big questions, big aspects people are going to be looking at, you think, that we haven't already touched on?
Well, my small project that I get money from the Ministry of Education in Poland is for using ozone in mushroom cultivation, and this is something I really believe in, because what's the main problem in the mushroom cultivation is that to produce this substrate, you need quite a lot of energy to sterilize it. So right. if we're talking about pasteurization, we are talking about heating the water with electricity on the gas for 12 hours. If we're talking about this high pressure sterilizers, it's also taking a lot of energy to complete this process. Then of course this mushroom substrate, it's hot, so you have to cool it down. It's all just a bit waste of energy. So now I'm testing have this project that I'm putting lots of ozone. I got some biggest possible ozone machine that is on the market in Poland, and I'm putting this ozone in the mixer I'm checking if it's managed to kill off this pest mushroom, this all molds. I am after the first tested. I have quite a good results for the oyster mushroom. Actually, when I compare the raw substrate and the substrate that was ozonate, I see in this ozonate substrate less molds and different smell. Still, there was some bacteria that was alive there, but of course, this raw substrate that was just water and the pellet and the soya bean, I use master mix for this research, it was completely thousands of the molds and lots of colors. The ozonate substrate was different. The lion's mane, chestnut, piopino and enoki mushroom didn't work on it, but as I say, the yellow oyster mushroom and gray oyster mushroom managed to do some fruiting bodies. Now I'm maybe in weeks or two I'm preparing a second experiment, and I will try longer ozonation, because last time it was like 20 minutes, now I will try to do this longer. And well, if it works, it will be, I think, something big, really big, because if we don't need this pressure cooking, we might have some simple ozone machine to produce mushroom. It's just ideal stuff to produce food and many more.
That sounds like it could be a massive game changer. And I have a little bit of ignorance around this, but what is that ozonation process? Is it just spraying that pure ozone into a chamber with the substrate, or what are the mechanics of that process?
Well, I'm just checking. I have a big mixer that is a big sink and it's close one. So it's I put the I have some this ozone machine that is producing the ozone and putting this ozone into the mixing substrate. So it's quite simple stuff.
Yeah.
Ozone just mixed with the substrate and killing some germs, but it's maybe just checking for how long it should be do. Maybe, for example, additional for some bacteria or some other stuff that will kill other pests, but we won't be harmful for the mushroom and will have a perfect way to produce mushroom without using so much energy, because as I say, energy is growing, the cost of the energy is really high, and this actually make mushroom cultivation and the mushroom quite expensive. If we don't need sterilization, the cost of preparing the substrate will be much, much lower.
Okay, that's incredible. That process is actually very simple. And everything we're taught, or when we talk about mushroom cultivation, what has stood out to me over the years is there's kind of a spectrum of sterilization. And I know a lot of us have read and kind of have this vision of a perfectly sterile environment, but there are kind of levels to that. We've talked about pasteurization. There are levels to that, in that not every single microorganism that could be living on that substrate needs to be killed necessarily for certain species to thrive. So I'm sure there's a spectrum of, or I'm sure there are technologies like ozone we could pair that'll have much lower energy investment and still get us where we need to be, it
This is
sounds
the
like.
same when we're talking about white button mushroom commercial cultivation. We in white button mushroom cultivation, this substrate is full of many organisms, and still these all organisms are living together with white button mushroom. It's when we're putting the mycelium, it's dominating, of course, but still in the mushroom compost from the white button, there are many bacteria and other mushrooms that are symbiotic with the white button mushroom mycelium. So maybe this is kind of goal, that use ozone to kill the molds, but also put something that's like to live together with lion's manes or oyster mushroom, and here you go. This is the you don't have to be complete sterile. You can just have easy and cheap to make substrate and make cheap food.
And the better we can understand and learn how to manage that microbiome, the less investment we need to make to kind of completely sterilize. And I love that. I love that idea and that framework you've laid out. And really, I've liked and resonated with all the information you're putting forward, as I'm sure all of our listeners have as well. So, Piotr, where can people connect with you, see more of your work? You have some great images. I love seeing the machines, your lab. Where can people connect and see more of your work? And also learn more about your research.
Well, of course, there are two ways. As I say, I got my this Instagram, Poland Fungi, so it's easiest to Instagram. Everybody is using Instagram, so if somebody want to connect with me, just send the message there. And if anybody are interested in this my scientific research, can just write Piotr Ziemba, and for example, ResearchGate. ResearchGate is this scientific Facebook, and all my research are there. So this is the best way to connect with me.
Fantastic. And I do encourage everyone to do so, because as you could hear, there's a lot of great information coming out. So definitely encourage everybody to go find your work and connect with you. And then I'll have us wrap things up with three questions that I like to ask all of my guests. And I have a feeling you'll have some really good answers for us. And the first question can sometimes be the toughest to answer, but that is a mushroom or fungus that you love. And why? And this can be one you love to look at, one you love to cultivate, one you love to eat, or one you love to find, in the forest, but just a mushroom you love and why.
Well, for eating, my favorite mushroom is shiitake mushroom, because it has the best taste and it's not so easy to grow, so it's quite satisfaction to grow it. Also, I have a hard relationship with the lion's mane, because I like to see how it's growing, but actually I'm not very happy with how to eat it and cook it. So every time I was cooking it, I just didn't eat it because it was just, I didn't like the taste of the lion's mane. But maybe I need to find some specific recipe of it. And well, my master thesis and my PhD are about the oyster mushroom, and the oyster mushroom are so common, but I just like the taste of them, and I think they're my mushroom that I really, really like. But well, it's a hard question because all mushrooms are something that I love to look at and love to work with, and yes, hard to have one specific, because if I say it too loud, they can just be not happy for me and they want to grow, stop working. So I love all of them.
Yeah, next time you go to the lab, you'll have some unhappy mushrooms.
Yes.
Yes, yes. But I think oyster mushrooms, I mean, all three that you listed are rock stars in kind of every aspect of gourmet and medicinally. And I think oyster mushrooms that much more so because of how robust they are and how easily they can be to cultivate. So some fantastic answers. And then a much broader question, but what has this relationship you developed with fungal organisms given to you? And that can mean, you know, the way it's changed, maybe how your mind works, the way some people it's connected them to a sense of spirituality. Some people mushrooms have taught them lessons about the world, but how has this relationship with fungal organisms changed you?
Well, I'm really happy man, because my hobby is my work. So, well, my mushrooms are part of my life. I'm working with them almost every day. So my relationship with fungi are very important because it's my job and it's my hobby. So this is something fantastic that I can connect this to stuff. When you work and you like your work, it's everything on the on, and you get money from it. It's all perfect.
That's living the dream, and I love that you just said I'm happy. It's like, what greater influence can we have in learning and working with another organism than it's making you happy? So that's fantastic. And then the last question, you know, we've talked some about the future and kind of the futures of mushroom cultivation and hinted at what a future might look like with more mushrooms in it. But how do you hope that our ongoing research and developing relationship with mushrooms changes the world for the better moving into the future? And this may be, you know, a snapshot 10, 20, maybe even 100 years from now, but as we kind of further research people like yourself are doing and learn more and more, how do you hope that changes our societies for the better?
Well, as I say, I would like to see this shelf full of the mushroom in the main shops. I would like to see this people eating the mushroom very common, much more, stop eating so much meat, but just eating the mushroom. And also what is interesting, and I hope in this way will cultivation of mushroom will go, because when we look for, especially on the USA farming system, we see small farms that are just family business, and they're growing mushroom on the local substrate, selling in the local market, and it's all local. This is I hope the in this way the mushroom farms will go in Europe, in Poland, that of course there will be some big growers, but still we'll have some small farms that maybe even mushroom growing will be part of the business, but it will kind of part of important part of the business, and everything will be local. So we won't have substrate from the China, shiitake substrate from the China selling the Poland and growing shiitake here, or as I say, mushroom cell from the other part of the world, but local growing using local substrate and money staying local. This is my future great hope. And people eating this mushroom local, so eating it more.
A beautiful vision of the future. Local mushroom farms distributed throughout all of our different countries, serving their communities, keeping the nutritional benefit, but also that economic benefit right in that local community. exploring all these different aspects of mushroom cultivation, because the more farms you have, the more chance you have for people to explore and try new things, and a very exciting vision of the future that you've laid out here. Well, Piotr, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I'm always impressed in speaking with people who really are as hands-on as you are, the insights you're pulling forward. And I know at this point you're still early in your career, so it's going to be really exciting to follow and see all the work that you end up doing over the coming years. But I'm glad we got a chance to sit down and speak with you. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you also. It was nice to speak about my story. And as I say to all mushroom growing people, don't give up. And all your ideas are important for all mushroom society. So together we need to grow like the mushroom mycelium and overgrow our planet for better future with mushrooms.